open a work session on House Bill 2124. And Janet, can you give us a rundown again on it, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2124 was the bill you heard on Friday, and it's at the request of the Employment Department. The bill is one that prohibits the transferring or acquiring of a business primarily for the purpose of obtaining a lower unemployment tax rate or for advising another person to engage in such an activity. This is the bill that's required if we want to stay in compliance with federal regulations regarding unemployment taxation. You have had at that meeting also a dash one amendment that were technical amendments. It specified that the provisions apply beginning January 1st, 2006 tax year. It deletes a requirement that the rates be recalculated for the immediate next quarter, give the agency additional time, and clarifies some references to tax rates to make sure that they weren't referencing experience rates. Again, Mr. Chair, this brings us into compliance with federal law. There was no opposing testimony. The new thing today at your place is a revenue impact statement. So if you want to take a minute to look that over. The bill has a minimal fiscal impact on the agency, and the revenue impact is positive. Mr. Chair, if there's any questions for the agency on the bill, Renee Bryant is here.
Okay. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt the dash ones. Representative Escobar.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, I recommend that we adopt 2124 with a dash one amendment as in the record.
Representative Escobar moves we adopt the dash one amendments to House Bill 2124. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? They are adopted. Representative Escobar.
You want to move it?
Move it, yeah.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that we move House Bill 2124-1 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves that we move to the House floor House Bill 2124 as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Dillon?
Excuse.
Representative Coleman?
Aye.
Representative Fritz?
Excused.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Aye. Good night. Representative Gilman, how do you vote on House Bill 2124?
Aye.
Representative Gilman votes aye on House Bill 2124.
You're the only one.
Motion carries, and Representative Escobar will carry the bill for us.
Glad to, sir.
All right, thank you. Okay. Which one's that? Is that Liz?
Yeah.
Somebody going to call him? Okay. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2572. And
we could introduce our committee bill in the session.
All right. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2572 and open a work session for the purpose of introducing some committee bills. And, Janet, what are the numbers?
House Bill 3052.
LC 3052.
LC 3052 at the request of Rob Douglas. That was in your packets yesterday. LC 1592. Let me see, and that's at the request of the
okay.
1592 is at the request of the NECA, National Electrical Contractors. LC 1591 at the request of the Plumbing and Electrical Contractors. And LC 1593 at the request of Jared Broadfoot.
So we have four of them all together. Okay. Chair would entertain a motion to adopt these bills as committee bills.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gilman moves we adopt LC 3052, 1592, 1591, and 1593 as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? And then they are adopted as committee bills. The first Representative Hansen is here. We open a public hearing on House Bill 2572, and Janet, give us a rundown on it, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2572 is at the request of Representative Wisnant and Senator Westland, and Representative Wisnant will be coming down later. He's in the Ways and Means Committee vote. The bill would require the public employer's retirement system to pay only those benefits funded by employee contributions to a member who is convicted of a work-related felony. It applies if either the illegal conduct occurred in the performance of the member's work duties as a public employee or the member's position allowed the conduct. It provides that if the member is not retired, he or she will receive benefits that are funded by the employee contributions upon retirement. If the member has already retired, it directs PERS to pay recalculated benefits based only on employee contributions, leaving out employer contributions, after the point of notification of the employee to the employee of the change. It applies to members employed before or after the effective date of the bill, which would be this coming January, to persons retiring before or after the effective date, and to felony convictions before or after the date, is my understanding. It also applies to Tier 1, Tier 2, and either active or inactive members. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. I thought I seen Representative Wisnant come to the door and look in and then...
Check outside.
Okay. Okay. I'll start with Rob Wagner then, please.
The lead before the bill sponsor. If he comes back.
When he shows up, we'll.
Okay. Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Wagner. I'm the political and legislative affairs director for the American Federation of Teachers, Oregon. Our members are higher ed faculty and graduate teaching students at OUS institutions, community college faculty and classified employees, and classified employees in K-12 schools. I have very brief comments, and I just wanted to point out some of the particulars of this legislation relative to some other similar legislation that is on the books in some other states where we might have some concerns. Let me start by just saying that our union does not in any way condone criminal behavior by employees, whether in the public or in the private sector. If you do the crime, you should do the time. We are also not opposed to restitution statutes where felons in the private or public sector are required to pay back penalties related to their criminal conviction. However, I'd just like to take an opportunity to point out a couple of potentially negative side effects of the proposed legislation, House Bill 2572.
Could I interrupt you?
Absolutely.
Here now, thank you.
Maybe I'll pull my objections.
After you hear that. Representative Wisnant, please. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. I apologize. I was overdoing the people's work.
Spending our money, weren't
you? Spent your money. My first time, I've been telling my constituents I haven't spent any of their money, but I spent some money today. But it's an honor to appear before you. Thanks for allowing me to be here and testify on two House bills. 2641, for the record, I am Representative Gene Wisnant. I live in Deschutes County. and have lived there for over 13 years. And I think that's an important part of my testimony today. I am a citizen in from Deschutes County.
Representative, we're on 2572.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if you would allow me to make my comments.
Let me, I'll open parallel hearings and I'll open a hearing on House Bill 2641.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd appreciate that. Is it all
okay?
Thank you.
I apologize for all the interruption here.
No, thank you.
We've got everything under control in this committee, really.
I am very confident you do, Mr. Chairman. I introduced these bills because of an event which happened in my district, in my backyard, and which contributes to citizens' distrust of elected officials and public servants. I am serving as state representative because I want to serve my constituents, make our state a better place, and help restore the public's confidence in our elected officials, which I would submit has declined. I had the honor of serving in the military for over 27 years. In the military, as an officer, as any military member is subject to double jeopardy. My friend Representative Esquivel knows that. If a military person breaks a law off the military facility, the officer is also subject to Uniform Code of Military Justice for the same event. I just read today that the military now has the highest confidence level of any profession of the public, trust and confidence. I want the public to have that same level of trust and confidence in elected officials and state employees. Let me tell you what happened in my district, in my backyard. Greg Brown served as Deschutes County Sheriff from 1996 to 2000. I don't know if I should read this. During which time he was once voted Oregon Sheriff of the Year. During the time that Greg Brown was serving as an elected official in our state, great state, he stole over $575,000 in taxpayers' money. Over $170,000 from Deschutes County. Over $400,000 from the Sisters Camp Sherman Fire and Police District, Service District. According to the Ben Bulletin, the money was funneled to personal banking accounts in Oregon, Delaware, and into his sister's base business, a private airline. At the time of his sentencing, Greg Brown repaid all the money he had stolen. In 2000, Greg Brown pleaded guilty to three federal felonies, one state felony, federal program fraud, money laundering, interstate transfer of stolen property, theft in the first degree. Mr. Brown was sentenced to 33 months in federal prison for his federal convictions and served his three-month state prison term concurrently. Mr. Brown is scheduled for release on September the 16th, 2005. I learned from my discussion this week with the PERS board, Mr. Brown is now receiving PERS benefits in prison, and when he retires, his PERS benefits will continue. The people were nice to talk to me. They could not give me the specific amounts that he will receive, but we guess anywhere from $60,000 to $100,000 a year. I can be corrected if that's not exactly correct. Despite Greg Brown's conduct while holding an integral position of public trust, he was still collecting his public employee retirement benefits, which are composed of substantial public contributions. In other words, he was supposedly working for us, and we were paying him to work for us, and we were paying him for his retirement benefits, and we just heard what he was doing. That Greg Brown or any other public employee should be allowed to default the public during his public employment and then also enjoy the benefit of additional public funds during retirement is the height of fiscal and social irresponsibility. But current laws facilitate such behavior and allows convicted felons to effectively triple dip triple dip. My intern came up with that term. Because he was committing costly public crimes, which, you know, cost the taxpayers money to investigate those. He was being paid in his position, his public position, and he was also accumulating retirement benefits. House Bill 2641 and 2572 are tailored to curtail such abuses of public employment by eliminating public retirement contributions. Both bills pertain only to felonies committed or facilitated by the scope or responsibility of the public employee. The bill doesn't address if you have a DUI or kill someone or it's not connected to your position that you're being elected for or you're serving the public trust as a public state employee. They do not extract ex post facto payments for public retirement contributions already paid by the retired. I'm not going back and taking all his retirement. I just want to take that part when he was elected, those 4 years, because this individual served since he was like 18 years old. He worked for the state. Both bills hold public employees accountable for their actions by revoking public retirement contributions to those employees convicted of felonies. Neither bill is intended to entirely revoke public retirement benefits, but only the funded portion of those benefits that I just talked to you about. All employees would remain entitled to all employment retirement contributions based upon the recognition that these funds were the employee put his money into the retirement fund. Specifically, House Bill 2641. Under this bill, if public employees convicted of an employee-related felony, the court can establish an appropriate fund that is then charged the employee's pension to the extent the pension is publicly funded. Employment funding of the pension remains intact for retirement and is untouched for payment of such fines. The financial reliance of retired public employees and their families will continue to be fulfilled through payment of employees' retirement contributions. I've received some press about this, and I'm taking away the support for the family. I don't think this amount really is going to significantly impact the employee's overall retirement benefits, that he couldn't take care of his family. This bill merely recovers a portion of the public resources wasted by the employee's criminal behavior while he was working for us. Public employees should not be allowed to waste public resources while working and then also receive public funding while retired. Public retirement contributions were made to the employee in good faith, and that employee was contributing to the public good instead of working to the contrary. For these reasons only, public retirement contributions are revoked to prevent the employee from receiving redundant public funds. Now, under House Bill 2572, the PERS Board is given authority to recalculate public employee pensions if the felony occurred. We've already talked about that. Try to speed it up here, Mr. Chair. Both bills, you have a written copy of my testimony that you can also read. But both bills effectively deprive employees who betray public trust and waste public resources by committing felonies as public employees from receiving the publicly funded portion of the retirement plans. The public employee will still receive the full sum of employee retirement contributions made during the course of his or her employment. The bills merely preclude public subsidization of felonies committed by public employees in their employment capacity and provide an effective means of financially taking care of the harm done for the specific crimes. Neither of these bills will deprive employees or their families from receiving retirement benefits earned rightly during good public employment. I'll close with that, Mr. Chair. I think that it's something that we need to do as leaders. As a member of the legislature, we need to help working to restore the confidence in public employees. There's been enough bad press in the last couple of years. I think that this bill, I hope we never have to use it. I hope we never, I think that's your wish and all of our wishes that we never have to use this. But this is a bill that will go the right way in restoring the public's confidence and its elected officials and public servants, and we need that help. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Do you know, was there ever any restitution of any kind? Was any of the funds that was stolen ever returned or recovered?
Yes, Mr. Chair. All, and that's sort of something we'd have to worry about how much money's out there, because he repaid the fines and the court costs immediately. I could not determine, because we've got federal courts and we've got state courts involved, of how much was court cost, but he repaid the fines immediately.
Okay, thank you. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I hope we can restore the faith and trust of public officials. It is definitely being discussed almost constantly. And I think any thieving, lying, cheating, bustard, no matter who they are, ought to be punished for it, and we sure shouldn't be out there rewarding them. That all being said, I think I heard some of it in your testimony, but I just want to clarify this. I'm concerned about spouses and families of no good, worthless, thieving, busting jerks. I don't think people's families should suffer for the acts of somebody out there, unless they're somehow in collusion with them, of course. But that's my concern here. I don't want to leave a spouse and some children hanging because of the acts, maybe totally unbeknownst to what they're doing, and in all likelihood it is. That's my main concern here. The premise of your argument, yeah, you're right. I don't want to, believe me, sir, I don't want to reward them either. I want to make sure justice is done. I have no problem with any of that. But could you just talk about my concerns a little bit there, as far as the families go, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shelter. I think this is a concern of everyone, and I talked to the PERS board when they came to my office that I would be willing to work with them and see if we can sort of protect the family to some extent by modifying the bill to give the family some sort of a safety net. But in, you know, the, again, you know, we have to be careful. If, you know, is our objective? My objective is to restore confidence in the public employees and elected officials. That's the primary purpose. Greg Brown, it happened in my backyard, and I feel embarrassed and betrayed by that, but this is about policy that's going to affect the future. And, I think that we could maybe, work out, or the committee could discuss that, and I would be open to some suggestions from the PERS board of this committee on how we could provide a safety net to the families. My intent is not to protect them, but again, my overall number one objective is to restore confidence in public employees and elected officials. And when something like this happens, the press reports it. It affects all of us. It reflects upon all of us. I'm here to serve because I want to restore that confidence. I made a presentation on behalf of a bill yesterday, supporting two constituents against a co-op in my district that has 30,000 members. That's not politically smart, but I did it because I thought it was the right thing to do, and I think this is the right thing to do, and I have all confidence. I know every member of this committee, and I think you'll do the right thing. So, good question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Representative Shields.
Mr. Chair, thanks for being here, Gene, on this important bill. You might even call it quadruple dipping if you think about the room and board, $37,000 a year that would be entailed. My concern with it, in addition to the family, is also it seems like we have a really egregious case in the case of the sheriff, and that if we broaden it out with affecting all public employees, that there might be some unintended consequences that maybe all of us can't foresee. I know you probably thought through this, but what about tightening it up similar to State Representative Butler's bill about a bus driver being on the school board that we had in the Education Committee, to maybe make it just for elected officials, or so that we don't end up getting a hammer down the road on somebody that perhaps might not deserve it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Shields, I think we have to look at public employees. Look at what happened, and since we've been here with the ODOT, refrigerators or whatever, I think the public is looking for us to give them, policies and protect and eliminate that sort of thing. Whether he's an elected official or he's being paid PERS and working for the state in a management position or any sort of position. I feel just like serving in the military. If you're taking a check from the public, you owe them a lot. you have to have a higher standard of conduct. You should be held at a higher level of responsibility. I think it can't just be elected. I think it has to be people that are working for the people. They're taking a check from the people. And I think I would, I don't want to say I wouldn't negotiate or compromise Representative Shields, but I would like to say it should be elected officials and state employees would be subject to loss of that portion of their retirement benefits, which we were paying them for the triple or quad dipping. We were paying them, but still from us. That doesn't make sense. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Esquivel.
Representative Wisnett, I agree with you because government is government. It doesn't matter whether you're at a local level, a county level, a state level, or a federal level. People don't distinguish that. They just look at us, elected officials and employees, as the government. And we need transparency within the government. And I think this is a good step.
Any other questions? Representative Schoenfeld.
Thank you. And I agree with your premise. Believe me, I do. It's a no-brainer. But, you talk about folks that are paying us our wages, and almost are put in a position where they have to trust us. And I think you can say the same thing, for example, for electricity ratepayers. They got to pay that. If they want this, they got to pay one company to get it. Now, we got a bunch of thieving, no good, low down, cheating, no goods down in Houston that, in my opinion, they shouldn't get that golden parachute. That money should be taken from them if their families are taken care of and not in some fancy mansion. Nice little ranch out there in the middle of Houston would be fine. I think that money should be taken back and redistributed to the ratepayers that have to trust them. And I'm not against power generators, don't get me wrong. I would love to see more power generated, and everybody in this building knows it. But I think you could, rather than, and maybe Chip, maybe Representative Shields is right to narrow it, maybe, I don't know. But I think we ought to broaden it. All the no-good, cheating, low-down busters out there. That's what I think we should do, Representative. And I bet you 99% of the population think that too. The other 1% is already locked up, probably. So I applaud you. I agree with your premise. I agree where you come from. Your hearts are right in the right direction. We do need to rebuild trust. But one, I want to make sure we protect innocent people because they didn't do anything wrong. And two, let's go after all of them. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I would like to add that with just touch on what Mike said. I agree that maybe down the road the committee should look at what we're doing for requiring restitution and compensation in the private sector as well.
Thank you again, Representative. I too applaud you for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
And the members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Let's see. Could I have Rob Wagner again, please?
I got to be the felony defendant today. No, I will just. I think a lot of what was said was right on spot. And like I said, with my initial remarks, that we believe very strongly in restitution. We believe in criminal sanction. We also believe that bad public employees give good public employees. It's problematic. So I mean, our members aren't interested in seeing people get away with anything. Just in terms of the specific legislation, I thought what I would do is provide just a really brief survey of the other states that actually have similar bad boy statutes like this on the books, with just two or three concerns with this particular legislation. Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Massachusetts have similar statutes on their books. Pennsylvania has a constitutional amendment that does something very similar. And talking about protecting family, the Rhode Island statute has what's called an innocent spouse protection, where the court can actually take into account the financial needs of innocent spouses and dependents. So it might be something that you'd be considered taking a look at. Second, in terms of due process, before stripping a PERS member of retirement benefit, it would seem that there should be some opportunity to present evidence to the board or whoever is the agency responsible for making that determination of why any benefit should not be withheld. Again, in Rhode Island, this is through a civil court proceeding. Third, in terms of proportionality, it might consider linking the damage claim to the actual monetary loss suffered by the government, similar to the precedent of restitution. So, and I don't know what the penalties were with Sheriff Brown in Deschutes County, or if he was paying back the whole $500,000 that he bilked the public out of, but might be something to consider. And then finally, in terms of a contract rights perspective, I think that the state will probably face litigation over this bill, and not from unions. Let me make that clear. Certainly not from ours, but from some member like a sheriff or a manager, somebody with means, who meets the criminal standard that's established in the legislation. And I would be surprised if this holds up under an Oregon constitutional challenge. Finally, in terms of the final issue, I would just say, sort of echoing some of the previous comments that were said, in terms of setting a different standard for public employees versus the private sector, I think there are plenty of examples in the private sector of criminal wrongdoing, and I'm just not aware to the degree that this specific method of restitution is leveled against private sector workers. It might happen. I just don't know. I don't know ERISA that well. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ron. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. Rob, and maybe the representative may answer, has the Department of Justice weighed in on an opinion on this? Have anybody asked them about the constitutionality or anything like that of this, to your knowledge?
I can't comment on that, so.
Of course.
And maybe we don't want them to.
Chair Brown, Representative Schaffer, our legal legislative counsel, I'm assuming checked with them to briefly, but I cannot confirm that. It was Mr. Hendricks's position that we had a chance. It could be a contractual law issue, but he thought this was an approach because I didn't go after all the retirement. I just went after that part that was why he was committing the crime. Mm-hmm. I didn't go after all the retirement. He thought that had a better chance. That was what he advised me in his capacity.
Yeah, and I think that we can ask, we can get that opinion from legal counsel. We can ask them to address it.
Thank you.
Janet?
Mr. Chair, in my conversations with legislative counsel, he indicated that the first bill, House Bill 2572, was more in danger of running afoul of contract rights, depending on what the court does with the PERS reform bills, than the second bill, which is a court proceeding and a court kind of garnishment of the wages instead of a PERS action.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
May I comment on that?
Certainly.
I did get that advice and conversation. I'm not sure legally what I'm supposed to say from legislative counsel, but we discussed that issue, and I still strongly want to go after the money, and my first bill has an effective date now, which would help my citizens in my district feel a little bit better about what happened to us. I do understand, in talking to the representatives from PERS board, that they would feel more comfortable putting it back in the court and let the court make the decision at whatever part of the retirement they went after. But again, I think this is something we have to step up to the plate and hit the ball on this one.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Escobar.
I think the key phrase here in this bill, what I'm reading, is a convicted felon. That's the trigger. I mean, we're not closing the gate. And the horse is in the barn. The horse is two ridges over when we're closing the gate here. They have been convicted of a felon, and it was while they were in the employ of the state. So,
any other questions?
Just have one.
Mr. Thank
Chair.
You again. Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill really has some implications, but I also think you're going down a a great path here of wanting some accountability, but I just have one technical question about the type of felony, and it's referred to, you know, in the summary as work-related felonies. Is there a list somewhere, do you know of what exactly work-related felonies are and what felonies would fall under this and which ones wouldn't?
I don't know.
Chair Brown, Representative Hobley, I didn't go there in that detail. And again, I would be happy and would look forward to working with this committee if we want to, you know, work some details out like that. But again, as I stated to this committee, you know, I think we all pray that we never have to use this bill. But if we can show the public we have the bill, you know, we've made that one step forward in helping restore our confidence.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Could I have Steve Delaney and Paul Clary, please? And I see you're signed up for both bills, and the public hearing's open on both of them, so appreciate comments on both bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Clary, Executive Director of the Public Employee Retirement System. With me is Steve Delaney, our Deputy Director and Legislative Coordinator. We appreciate the opportunity to testify on these two bills this morning, and we did have an opportunity to speak some with the sponsor earlier this week and relay some of our concerns as well as our willingness to work with him to address what obviously is a legitimate concern of both his and a number of people throughout the state, as well as I would say the PERS board, because with the new board, one of the key guiding principles is improving the accountability and the trustworthiness of our agency and the duties that we discharge. We provide at PERS an integrated system of death, disability, and retirement benefits to about 160,000 working Oregonians that are providing public service throughout the state for 875 public employers, as well as about 100,000 retired members and beneficiaries, and some 50,000 inactive members that have yet to retire. Personally, I've had the privilege and pleasure of being a public servant for some 28 years, working for five different agencies in two different states. I think I was introduced one time by Senator Messley as the guy who has trouble holding a job. But wherever I've been, there's always been an extremely high standard of conduct, both personal and how we discharge the duties of our office and the duties of our agencies. And key to that standard of conduct was providing equal treatment under the law. We had to provide equal treatment whether we were operating a land and mineral leasing program like I was in Wyoming as well as here in Oregon, whether I was processing grants and loans, or regulating water rights, and now processing retirement and disability applications. And I think you'll see in our testimony on these two bills that's one of the three concerns that we raise. How do we ensure that we're providing equal treatment under the law? And you'll see where there was an amendment both to our statutes as well as to the private pension portion of the Oregon law regarding child support, where they went in and subjected 25% of the pension payments as available for garnishment or execution in order to pay child support, and it applied equally to both public pensions and private pensions. We always have another concern of ours, of course, is consideration for beneficiaries. I remember when I was in the environmental regulation area, people always were saying, you know, if you got one or two bad apples out there, don't swing such a big stick that you hit the everyone else who really is trying to do the right thing, and also consider the unintended consequences. And in this case, certainly, while we abhor any kind of illegal action of a member of a public employee throughout the state. We do need to keep in mind that these are benefits that accrue not only to the member but to their families and their beneficiaries. And then a third standard concern that we always have is because we are operating a tax-qualified plan, we always want to make sure that we're consistent with the Internal Revenue Service's regulations. And this is one of the things that we worked on in terms of the child support provision, and we'd almost want to, if any of these bills were to pass, we'd want to make them effective upon us getting a letter ruling from the Internal Revenue Service that it didn't adversely affect the tax qualification of the plan. So with those three concerns, we've got some detailed comments in our testimony. Again, I would point out that there was an amendment to both the public and private pension provisions of Oregon statutes, I believe, back sometime in the mid-90s, possibly related to a federal deadbeat dad law or something that did provide for execution of 25% of the retirement benefits, both from a public or a private pension, to pay child support. That may be a model that you could apply in this arena as well.
Thank you, Paul. Steve, did you have some comments too?
I'm just here as backup.
Okay, any questions? Don't say any. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you.
Well, committee, what I would like to do with this is I would like to ask Representative Schaffler, he will work with Representative Wisnett and put together a work group and see if we can't come back with some legislation that we can move then. Would that, I'm getting a nod, yes, okay.
All right.
Janet?
Yeah.
Well, fun stuff. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2572 and 2641. And what do we have left, Janet?
2434.
Okay. Open public hearing on House Bill 2434, and we have... We have Representative Hansen with us. Good morning. Go ahead, Janet, and give us a...
House Bill 2434 is sponsored by Representative Hansen. And would provide that while a public employee retirement system member draws temporary total disability benefits for a work-related illness or injury, the person will continue to accrue per-service credit. And it also specifies that the employer will continue to make PERS contributions for that employee based on the salary the person that had at the time they left work. It includes members of the individual account program as well as Tier 1 and Tier 2 members. And there's a blank in the bill for when the fee begins to apply for persons who left work on or after blank on the second page of the bill. Mr. Chair, this bill has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee, and that's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Janet. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for scheduling a hearing on this, and thank you, committee, for listening. We've just been through a discussion on when a public employee doesn't do their job or is involved in an illicit activity as an employee. This bill is kind of the opposite. It's of when a employee does what they're supposed to do and still there's a technical problem in terms of how to receive their full benefits. We tried to draft the bill very specifically to deal with the problem that Mr. Dwight Williams had. You could say that this is a bill in progress because we've been getting more information both from the firefighters' attorneys and from PERS that there still needs to be some work done on the bill to accomplish what we want it to do. So I'm turning it over to Pat West to explain that problem. Again, it's a bill in progress. It still needs some detail work on it, also filling in the blank in terms of the an amendment for the time that it would start. But I would like to thank the committee for hearing it. I think this is one of the things where government, our system of government, shines and does some of its best work when we see an individual problem for one of our constituents, and we as the public legislature moves to fix that one inequity. And I certainly appreciate you putting the time and effort into helping to correct this.
Thank you, Representative. Pat, you want to go ahead, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for giving us the time to discuss this issue. My name is Pat West. I'm president of the Oregon State Firefighters, and I'm here to, on behalf of essentially disabled firefighters across the state. It's a situation that we've been aware of for a considerable amount of time, and that is that when a person injures themselves on the job, they receive PERS benefits in such a fashion that they can be off. Let me back up just a second. Firefighters tend to have serious injuries. So when we have a serious back injury or knee injury, they can end up being off for a lengthy amount of time on what they consider to be a temporary position disability until it's deemed to be a total permanent disability. And during that time, there is no contributions made to their PERS, so they can be off for a year, and their PERS is essentially frozen for the time that they're off on this disability. And so the intention of this bill is to correct that, to make it so that they would receive the same amount had they continued to work. The purpose, again, is pretty simple. It's that person injured themselves in the line of duty. They fell off a ladder. They were burned in a fire. They got shot as a police officer. So what we're trying to fix is this. It's not a huge amount of money, but it can be the longer the time off is that they're on a temporary position. So that's what the bill is intended to correct, to make them whole, to make it as if when the day that they're deemed to be permanently disabled and go on disability through PERS, that they get the same as if they had worked until that day. That's the intention of the bill. The PERS representatives are going to come up and talk to you. There's apparently the possibility that there's the old unintended consequences. So I'll let them describe that part. But what I would like to say is that if we can work with PERS and talk with our attorneys and see if we can come up with some language that will actually accomplish what this bill is intended to, that I would like to be able to do that.
Go ahead, Representative. Sure.
Just make a real brief summary of the problem. If a firefighter would fall off of a ladder and be instantly permanently disabled, a very serious instant accident, their benefits would be based on their previous salary. If the injury is such that they're on a temporary disability status for up to a year, and sometimes even possibly longer, and then the industry, because of the way it heals or their recovery or whatever, is such that it becomes a permanent disability, their benefit shouldn't be reduced. They shouldn't receive a lesser benefit over the fact that they were on a temporary disability status for a period of time before the disability became permanent. And that's kind of the whole thrust of the inequity that we're trying to adjust. And we've got some people that are working to make that happen.
During that period of time that they're on disability, does the employer continue to pay into the system then, or is it just you're concerned about counting the time?
Well, it's the time. The other one is there's different mixes, I think, in different jurisdictions in terms of whether they're getting salary from their employer, which I believe would be making a PERS contribution, but it's usually a lesser amount, or whether that salary is coming from an insurance company, or kind of the problem is the nature of how that compensation during the temporary period is derived.
Okay. First we'll go to Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're just strictly talking about on the job, in the line of duty, injuries. And then the second, and I see your answer, I'm good. The second one is, what about a men and women that, if something cover them if they're in the reserves or National Guard and they leave and get injured over there and come back, would this include those folks too? Are you doing anything in that direction or not?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Schaffler, I don't believe this bill will change that. I don't think that there is any coverage for those people for that situation.
Representative Kitts.
I've got I'll ask one question. I'll ask for a follow-up. The length of time for TPD, what's the maximum for temporary?
Representative Kitts, Chairman Brown, I don't honestly know the answer to that. I know that it's based upon being declared medically stationary. So whatever that amount of time is.
Follow-up? The way it's written, this doesn't just apply to firefighters or police officers. It applies to any member of the public employees retirement system. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Follow-up? We know that as a result of the MLAC process currently and the difficulties that it presents when you get management, business, and labor in the same room to come up with an agreement, permanent total disability is, with the definition that's currently existing for PTD, it's the odds of it ever being awarded are slim to none. If in the case it was awarded, how would this bill affect it, or is this, the language currently is restricted to temporary. Is there a different trigger mechanism that kicks in for people that, you know, were actually awarded PTD as the provisions of this bill provide for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kitts, I don't believe so. I believe that, you know, it's set up under the same criteria that PERS has, which is tied to workers' comp. So you must be receiving, you must be on a time loss, you know, accepted time loss situation for this to happen.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Esquivel.
Yes, maybe you've done some research on this, but what my first question is what is the private sector doing? If you fall off a roof and you're working for a company, does your retirement continue if you're off for a year? And that's, you know, we're talking same type of an injury. Do we have any feedback on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I don't know the answer to that. I know there are private plans out there that have similar provisions, and there are other plans that don't. But I don't have a study.
I'd be interested to know that because, I mean, the private sector is the private sector, and they do pay a substantial amount of the bills in this building.
I think it would vary a great deal from company to company, and again, how the compensation is structured during that period. If you're working for a private employer that continues your salary or continues the salary difference between your workers' comp, the gap between the workers' comp and what is going to vary from company to company and whatever their individual personnel policies are. And that's going to determine, I think, whether they're continuing to pay in on the retirement or the disability period payments during that period. But I think it's going to vary all over the place.
So we really don't have any tracking on that?
No.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, as a follow-up to what Representative Esquivel has just said, I would be curious to, and maybe it's the prerogative of the author of the bill, if you could find something in the private sector that accomplishes or effectively does what you're asking, you know, the PERS, you know, recipients to receive. If there's something comparable out there, I'd be interested in that question as well.
Any other questions? I think that will do it, then. No questions. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you for your time and for scheduling this.
You bet. Could I have Steve Delaney and Paul Clary again, please?
I can marry going nuts.
Representative Brown, members of the committee, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of PERS. My apologies. Paul had to head off to another meeting, so I am the one giving your testimony this morning on 2434. Let me just briefly tell you what my testimony will involve, but let me also then address some of the issues that were raised in the prior discussion. In our testimony, we're commenting on what appear to us to be some unintended consequences of the bill. By making workers' comp PERS-covered salary, what that would change is the ability of a member who has a duty disability to be able to apply for PERS benefit. You cannot be retired under PERS and still have contributions coming into PERS for covered salary. So if a person's receiving workers' comp and were to consider that covered salary, they'd have to delay their filing for PERS disability until they'd exhausted their workers' comp benefits. That's not the case now. Presently, if you're injured, you can apply for your workers' comp and apply for PERS at the same time, and in fact can receive the two concurrently. The issue really is, what salary does PERS use when it finally determines the benefit that's to be paid to the individual? When a person retires under PERS disability, current statute directs PERS to pay a person the benefit they would have received if they had continued working to age 55, which is normal retirement age for police and fire, or age 58, if they were a general service member. And we look at the high three years of a person's salary to determine the final average salary make a benefit payment to these individuals. In the scenario that kind of brought this all to a head and has brought this bill forward to this committee, a member was injured in October of 97. The employer continued to pay half his salary, which was therefore considered PERS covered and had contributions coming in. And he also received workers' comp, which is not considered PERS salary. So no contributions came to PERS for that piece. His workers' comp was over or had run its course by October of 98. He applied for PERS disability at that point because he now was no longer getting a salary from the employer, and immediately qualified, and we paid him a benefit. He looked back at that 12-month period and said, that was very low salary. PERS is harming me by having gotten a partial salary during this temporary period. But PERS didn't count that salary. We jumped over that year and used three prior years that were higher. Now, the member argued, well, if you had taken in the contributions from the workers' comp, then maybe this year while I was temporarily injured would have been equal to the prior years. Our sense is, and I don't know this without working with the sponsors, is that still would not be the case, because generally police and fire members have a large amount of overtime that they work. So when we jump to prior years, we're not looking just at base salary. We're looking at what did they get paid in those prior years. And so generally it's base salary plus overtime. So even in this scenario with Mr. Williams, for the period of 97 to 98, even if we had accepted contributions in on the workers' comp piece, our assumption is it would still be lower than the three prior years because there would have been no overtime involved in it. Only other concern I'd like to mention, it's in our testimony, is the bill does, because of the retroactive application of it, would be an administrative burden for PERS, frankly. We do not normally obtain all workers' comp data because we're using our own standards in determining if a person is disabled. So it would require us to go back into some records if there's a retroactive application to find out who had workers' comp, who didn't. It would even, if this bill were to pass and we were to say that workers' comp is considered covered salary, then people in the past that are covered by this bill that had workers' comp and were disabled for PERS, we'd have to invoice them and take back the PERS disability benefits they'd received at this point. So there are some unintended consequences. We're more than happy to work with the sponsors of this bill and try to address the issues they may have and be able to work with them and bring forward a modification to the bill.
Thank you, Steve. Representative Shaw.
Thank you. Just for the record, I support this. But my question is, if we're going to go examine, can we examine private plans? Are they bound to disclose their information? I mean, any benefits I get from the state are, I would assume, a matter of public record. So it's easy for us to go through the details, the incredibly voluminous details of just this one part of government. But are the private, can we go in, for example, these studies we're talking about, which I'm all for, if we can find a model, that's great. But to my knowledge, are they? I don't believe they're required to disclose anything. So how are we really going to study that?
Representative Brown, Representative Schaffler, I couldn't tell you how we would go about that. We do have fairly good connections to other state plans and can obtain information as to how other states deal with issues. It's very rare for us to have contact with private plans. So we'd be sort of tilling new ground, as it were, and trying to find that information.
Mr. Chair.
Well,
and I don't mean to say that we shouldn't try and do that. I'm just saying, can we do that?
Any other questions? Thank you, Steve. Appreciate your testimony. Is there anyone else here that would like to testify on House Bill 2434? Good morning, Jim.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Jim Green, representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I hadn't planned to testify on this, but as we talk about unintended consequences with this bill does have unintended consequences beyond just dealing with police and firefighters. It covers every PERS-covered employee across the state. And what this bill would do, if you look at it on page 2, would require employers across the state to continue making PERS contributions based on the salary the individual was making at the time they were injured and not working for the employer at that time. Now, if it's a duty-related disability, there are some concerns about whether the individual should get compensation for that, and if they've been injured on the job, then they should get their workers' compensation benefits. But this adds cost to public employers across the state, plain and simple, because it would require us to make contributions for an individual who's not working for us. And in the schools, we would have to hire somebody to replace that person. Let's take an injured bus driver for an example. We can't not have that bus run. We've got to hire somebody to replace that injured worker, so we're going to pay PERS on them, and this bill would ask us to pay PERS for somebody not working for us. I understand the concerns of the bill. I understand the issue dealing with the one circumstance, but this has unintended consequences that covers the entire system. I'd be willing to work with Representative Hansen, but there are unintended costs associated with this. And when you look at what happened recently with PERS rates for school districts, you know, we're going to pay 17% as of July of 2005. That rate is going to go to 22% in July of 2007. That doesn't include the 6% pickup that many school districts have put in there. Those are already really high costs, and this would add an additional cost to school districts, not only school districts, but I think public employers. I think you have some written testimony there from the counties, cities, and special districts that have concerns about this bill as well.
Thank you. Representative Kitts.
Forgive my naivete on the subject. Is it a violation of some union contract or something of that nature if, in fact, you were to hire a temporary to fulfill the position, the exact example that you just gave? Let's say you had a bus driver that's vested in the system that is receiving TPD at the time. Is it a violation of some union thing that you couldn't hire a temporary and not pay those benefits while for the duration of it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kitts, it's not a violation of any collective bargaining agreement. What happens is that the person who's got a temporary disability, when they're eligible for work, we must restore them to a position that's equal to that position when they left. That temporary employee, quote-unquote temporary employee that we've hired, if they are a temporary employee but they work more than 600 hours in a calendar year, they're going to be considered PERS eligible, for which we have to begin paying PERS benefits on them. So depending on the length of that disability for that individual, if the individual worked for us for a year and a half, let's say, and then that injured worker came back to work, was eligible to come back to work, you know, what we do with that temporary employee is subject to collective bargaining as well, subject to what we may do, but we would be paying PERS benefits on that temporary employee.
May I have a follow-up? Is there a provision that you could put in this bill that would address something such as that, that said if a temporary employee were hired to replace someone that was a recipient of TPD, that in fact, you know, they are not eligible unless it's deemed that they go, you know, that the person from TPD goes to PTD, and then they become eligible retroactive based on their service?
Mr. Chairman, representing kids, I don't think there's anything that would prohibit it from being put in the bill. I think some of the other folks that are in the room may have some concerns about putting that in the bill, however. Because once a person, you know, the adage is it PERS. Once you work 600 hours in a covered position, you're PERS eligible. And you would be changing that rule, which is fine to do in statute, but I think some of the sponsors of the bill may have some concerns about that.
I would imagine they would.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you. Mr. Green, does any special district, school district, or local government have to be in PERS? Or get into a collective bargaining contract with the union?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shoffler, school districts are required to be in PERS.
Mm-hmm.
When the system was created, school districts were mandated to be in PERS. Other governments are able to opt in to PERS. Once you're in PERS. So we do have some units of local government that are not in PERS.
Mm-hmm.
All school districts, education service districts, and community colleges that I represent are in PERS under a mandate from the legislature. They are required to, as you know, collectively bargain with an exclusive representative once those have been decided under the public employee collective bargaining laws.
And one more follow-up briefly. You know, this would be a burden, and I agree with you, it is a burden, and it would cost more money. But, you know, wages are a burden, health insurance is a burden. You know, there's a lot of burdens we have, but we get something back for that burden. And it seems to me that all we're talking about is the burden. We're not talking about what we're getting back in payment for it. And I think that side of this issue needs to be talked about at the same time. It isn't like we're just throwing money out there for nothing. It costs us money. There's no doubt in my mind. It costs a lot of money. My daughter goes to public school. But we need to remember what we're getting back in return for it, too. We're paying for something.
And, Mr. Chairman, Representative Shoffler, I don't mean to diminish that. We are. We're paying for a value of the service that the employee provides to us, which in our stance is providing educational services to boys and girls of the state of Oregon, which is not an easy job. But we have to look at the cost associated with providing those services and try to get the most bang for our buck in our K-12 system. And as I said, I'd be willing to work with Representative Hansen and the other folks on this bill to try to narrow its scope so it doesn't have the unintended consequences that you heard from Mr. Delaney and some of the unintended cost consequences that you heard from me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Fine. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair.
Janet?
Received written testimony from the League of Oregon Cities, Association of Oregon Counties, and Special Districts Association. I'll pass
that. Okay. Thank you, Janet. Anyone else that would like to testify on House Bill 2434? Thank you, Mary. This is the first of this session.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Botkin. I'm here representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and we represent about 21,000 public employees across the state of Oregon. I actually had not prepared to testify on this bill, but I feel a little compelled at this point. Number one, public employees don't get up in the morning and say, I know I'm going to go to work today and get injured so I can, like, double dip. That doesn't happen. Two, the point is that a public employee who is injured in the line of duty has an obligation to try to get well and go back and do their job. We think it's only appropriate that the employer also have a duty to make sure that on the day that employee is injured, they suffer no economic recompense for that. And that their, at least their retirement is held harmless. We've had corrections officers who have been off the job for over a year, recovering from injuries caused by brutal attacks by inmates. And they lose a year, or in one case, a year and a half worth of time on their retirement. It means they have to work a year and a half longer to get retirement benefits. That's not right. What we need to do is hold them harmless. We need to say that on the day you were injured, once that workers' comp injury is an accepted claim, which means they've determined that yes, indeed, it was an on-the-job injury, and yes, it is compensable, that you should not suffer any economic ill effects as a result of that injury. And quite frankly, whatever we need to do to make this bill do that, we need to do it. Because it's not about burdens. At some point, it's about doing the right thing. It's just simply about saying to your employees, we're going to hold you accountable for the things you do wrong, but when you do it all right, we're going to make sure we take care of you. And it doesn't matter whether you drive a school bus, work in a prison, fight fires, or carry a gun and keep the community safe. It just doesn't matter. Because those folks signed up for public service. And you are the public. And your constituents are the public. And doing the right thing sometimes creates a burden. It creates a burden for everybody. Sometimes it's a burden just to get up and go to work in the morning. But you know what? Folks do it every day. And our folks do it just like your constituents do. And we just urge you to do the right thing with this bill. Make it law. Make it work. And fix the problems that may or may not be encompassed in this bill. And let's move it forward and make it the law of the land. It's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Is there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Okay. Is there anyone else on House Bill 2434? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2434. And did we have Representative Gallum here? Oh, there, John, right there. Somebody as tall as him, I can open the public hearing on House Bill 2521. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, colleagues, and good morning, Chairman Brown. For the record, I'm Representative John Dollum, House District 59, and with me is Del Caesar, former city manager from the Dalles. And I want to give you a short history lesson. Long ago, the state of Oregon decided that PERS retirees' income would be forgiven state taxes. And that seemed like the right thing to do. Prior to 1991, by the way, federal employees felt that they had the same benefit coming and that they should be given tax forgiveness also. That was done in 1991. There was threatened lawsuit. In fact, I believe there was lawsuit. And the legislature came to agreement, and state PERS employees and federal employees were given tax forgiveness on their retirement. This seemed to cover the entire cadre, but there was a very small group, less than 5%, that had other retirement plans. The question was just asked, do school districts have to belong to PERS? The answer was yes, they do, but some agencies could opt out. That happened in the case of the city of the Dalles. In 1991, the law was passed, but the excluded group, a very small group, does not have tax forgiveness on their retirement. This piece of legislation has been before the House three other times. In fact, in the last session, I believe it was, my colleague from Hood River introduced the legislation. It went out of the House 56-1. We're asking that we bring the same privilege to public employees that were not covered by either of these programs to the few that were. It made sense three other times. It makes sense this time. And with that, I'll introduce you to Del Caesar. He's former city manager from the Dalles, and he can give you details on their particular case.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Mr. Caesar.
Mr. Chairman and committee people, when Governor Kitzhaber came to the Dalles at the Discovery Center to give a talk one night, and he opened it for comments, and when I stood up and said just what John had said, that all the public employees were paid because we didn't pay taxes before 1991 if you retired before 1991, except the city of the Dalles, and except Astoria, as far as I know. Then he said, you mean you didn't get the check? And I said, no, we did not get the check. And he called for his assistant to stand up, and he said, follow her outside and explain it to her, and we'll talk about it later. So I did, and she took the information, and then when I talked to her later, she said the governor is very interested in getting this passed. The first term I was down here, I didn't know we needed a bill. So I was down here hustling everybody, And then I talked to this lady again. I can't remember her name, but she was the assistant. And she said, well, you need a bill. So I went to see Bob Montgomery, who was our representative at that time. He said, Dell, you're 4 days late. The bill stopped being made. So we had to wait 2 years. And then Patty Smith was our representative. So I called her. I talked to her before she ran. We had a nice talk. And so she did draw up a bill. It did go through two committees. I was here at both committees to talk. And it was passed on the floor by a vote of 56-1 and sent to the Senate. The Senate chairman pigeonholed it. We were late that year, and it was only 2 weeks away, and he wouldn't hear it. So we got nowhere that way. Last term, John Mabry had one drawn up, and about 3 weeks into the session, everybody on both sides pulled anything that had with money to do with it and pulled it out and wouldn't hear it. So here we are. There was about 10 employees in the city of Dallas, maybe 11. I'm just guessing at 10. And three of them have already died. You have to figure at 65, and they retired before 1991. They're getting a little older. And so I'm worried that we can go on and on and on, but I don't think I'll be back in 2 years if we don't get it this time. But all we think is what's fair for all the rest of the city employees in the city of in Oregon should be ready for us. What I passed out, and I'm sorry some of you didn't get the letterhead. There is letterhead on there, but I'm not a good secretary, so I didn't get the letterhead on it first. The paragraph I'd like to read is the third one down, the large one. When the Oregon legislature passed House Bill 3349 as a remedy for the state taxation of public employees, it specified members of PERS. I can't verify that this was simply an oversight, but suspect it was prompted by the fact that about 95% of Oregon's public employees are PERS members. The employees of some political divisions, such as the Dells, were not PERS members, may not have occurred to the legislators. I have seen no evidence that any elected official consciously treats such employees as any less deserving than others. And the last paragraph, since that occurred, however, a number of people have argued that all retirees in Oregon should receive equal treatment. Although these arguments come primarily from the private sector, the argument of equal treatment would certainly extend to people in your circumstances. And this was signed by David Amick of the PERS. And I'm sorry some of you didn't get the letterhead, but they're all the same letter. And then when I wrote the governor, he answered me on March 23rd of 1999. This is from Annabelle Jaramillo, from Citizens Representative. Mr. Amick from PERS indicated employees of some political divisions were not members of PERS. The Dalles was one such entity. Legislative action addressed the tax issues for employees in the PERS system only. Additional federal employees received tax rebates because of court decisions. Any rebates to other than PERS or federal retirees would have to be dealt with through new legislation. Because you have copied your legislative representative, I'm assuming you are in contact with them. I recommend you continue to work with them to seek resolutions to your concerns. This office cannot broaden the scope of tax rebates without legislative action. And all we're asking for is, like Mary said just before me, is to be treated fairly. If all the employees in the state that are local or city employees were paid this rebate, how about us at the Dells? And when I talked to Dale Curry in Astoria, because they had the same plan we did, he said to me, we aren't, more or less what he said, we didn't qualify anybody. No one that retired before 91 was qualified, because people in small communities like the Dells usually move on to a better paying job in a larger city. But our public works people mainly, and two of our firemen and myself, we liked the Dells and we stayed there. So all we're asking for is a fair treatment to get what others got. And it's not like breaking the budget. I think that it was approximately an average of $5,000, and there's 10 of us, that's $50,000. So I don't think we're out to break the budget of the state.
Thank you for
thank you.
And are there other cities out there that...
The only one I know about is Astoria, because I checked at Standard, and they said Astoria had the same plan we had. And Standard Insurance was our insurance company. There's a big difference between PRS and they get a raise every year, and we don't. When you retire, that's the money you get each month until you die. So we had the wrong plan. But what happens in a small community, as many of you maybe are from small communities, when you're going to go to a retirement plan, the local insurance people come up too. Instead of going to the state, you should help the local employee. And so that's why we got Standard through one of our local insurance agency convincing the council that their plan was better. And that's where we stand.
Thank you. Representative Chalker.
Thank you. Yeah, I support this. It's just a small number of folks, and I'd like to help you. But I think, you know, you all opted not to be in PERS, right?
No, the city council opted to go through the insurance company. The employees had nothing. This was before my time. I started on January 1st of 1968, and this plan was in action 1 year. And what happened is the council went along with the insurance men and went that way, not the city employees.
Right.
This was prior to unionization or anything else.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, you know, the state and the school districts and most local governments, we all wanted to make this system up, and I want to help you. But, you know, we signed into these agreements, and it just drives me crazy that now we're all upset about the agreement we all went into, and I want to help you. I'm editorializing about something else. You have to forgive me, but I hope we do get to help you this year.
Thank you.
And thank you for your sir.
Representative Gilman.
Mr. Chair, I'm in support of this bill. I happen to know that Eagle Point is not a PERS city also, but I don't know if it applies. That's the thing. I've written a note to myself, and I'll check it out.
I think what it refers to is anybody retiring before 1991.
Okay.
That's what I was told the rules were.
Representative Gilman, would you like our office to check if there are any other cities, or will you do that? We would be glad to do that.
If you want to do it, that'd be great.
We'll see if we can find what other who else this might impact.
Okay. Thank you, folks. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much, Representative Brown, Chairman Brown, and committee members.
And I apologize for the letterhead missing on some of them.
That's no problem. This does have a referral to revenue.
Do you want a motion on this?
Yeah,
Chair?
Let's send it on to revenue.
Okay. Chair, I move that we refer House Bill 2521 to revenue. Do we send that on with a recommendation?
We can, if we choose to.
With a due pass recommendation.
Oh, excuse me. First of all, got to back up. Okay. I'll close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2521.
Mr. Chair, I move that we refer House Bill 2521 to the House Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffer moves House Bill 2521 to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we can call the roll, please.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Hoagland?
Aye.
Representative Kitt?
Aye.
Representative Schaffer?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Thank you
very
much, Representative
Escobar? Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Anything else, Janet?
Mr. Chair, Monday's meeting is delayed until 9:40. It's the magic time we picked.
Every day's a magic day.
And we're doing a number of bills. At floor session is at 11, so there still should be time in there, but we are delayed till 9:40. And again, Friday is the 9 o'clock to noon in Portland. We'll get you directions of how to get to the training center. And please let us know if there's somebody that aren't going to be able to come.
It's the committee meeting is 9 until noon.
Yeah.
I have a noon engagement, Mr. Chair, so I'll probably have to leave there about 11:30, 11:45.
Yeah. Thank you, Rick.
Would you like me to report on that?
Is it dead or not? Okay. Okay, anything else? Seeing nothing else, we are adjourned. Free for the week.